All right, we're already talking too much off the air here. Congressman Joe Cordy, we're really glad to have you in. This has been like a couple of years,
yeah,
I feel, in the making.
Trying. Yes.
And I appreciate you following through and being a man of your word. Now, is this term number 10? You're running for your ninth.
Yeah,
you got eight terms.
Right.
And you're 71?
I am.
Do you think about the end at all, or?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm in good health.
Yeah, you look great.
Knock on wood, and my wife's still working. We had a good long talk about, going at this again this year. And I still enjoy the work. I mean, there's a lot going on in the district that I, and I'm, later this morning, I'm going down to Westbrook High School for a ribbon cutting for a new welding lab.
Oh, nice. You need a lot of welders in your district.
And we did one up in the northeast corner up in Turtle Lot. So anyway, plus the seniority that you accumulate in the House, it's a fact of life, that's how you get gavels. That's right. How you get control. The committee I'm on, Armed Services, is the healthiest committee in Congress. We produce a defense bill every year. It's now become sort of the Christmas tree that everybody else tries to jump on from other committees there. And I think this is an important election, so I'm all in.
I think it should be noted. And again, I'm an unaffiliated voter. You were, I think, the top bipartisan congressman in 2023.
In Connecticut,
yep. Of your delegation. But I want to take it, like a lot of people just don't go back. Because when I was in Connecticut originally, I was at NBC Connecticut from 02 to 07. That's sort of when you were sort of emerging. Did you always want to be, was service always your goal? You have a long career from the State House on up.
So I did not grow up in a political family. My dad was a lifelong Republican and, was a great guy and was an FBI agent, actually, during World War II.
Wow.
That's where he met my mother. She worked there as well. Kind of a.
I was going to say, was he surveilling her or something?
Or vice versa. So, but anyway, so again, it wasn't sort of a Kennedy family where everybody.
But when you went to UConn Law, were you thinking about service or no?
I worked a couple of years in the public defender's office, which I really enjoyed that. And, I practiced law for two decades and wasn't miserable or anything like that. But I definitely got the bug when I was an intern in law school my last year. Actually, Sam Gaidenson was the state rep from Colchester at the time. And that's where I sort of got the bug because I really enjoyed watching the process work. But it really there was no sort of plan. That we sort of laid out.
And then you were in the state house. And then you took a little break. Then you ran against Simmons and lost.
Correct.
And then you ran against Simmons 4 years later and won.
2 years. That's
two
correct. Year. 2 years. You're right. Your
right.
memory is better than mine.
And so, no, I researched.
Okay.
It's not from memory. But in the interim there, between the state, serving in the state level to your first win in Congress, were you in private practice?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
And, the reason why I left the legislature wasn't because I got chased out or beat. It was just, we were expecting our second kid.
Right.
And
you need to make some money.
And the strain of the part-time legislature, which I think sometimes people...
Should it be full-time? I have this conversation a lot. Is there enough work for it? There's too much work for part-time, but is there enough for full-time?
No, that describes it perfectly.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm glad they finally unfroze the pay levels because it really makes it, particularly for, middle-class people and even working-class people, almost impossible.
Yeah,
to sort of do so.
I think of Jason Rojas. I mean, he's got two really big jobs. How do you do that? We're talking with Joe Cordy, congressman in the second district. I just think we're going to take a little break here. We'll get into all the policy stuff. And I don't know if this term will be your last or not. But do you believe in term limits? Like, I don't think it'll ever happen because I just don't think there's enough. We legislate so little now to go after that would take up so much oxygen between spending and that we wouldn't do anything else, right?
Right.
I mean, you can't even attack that kind of issue. But do you think it's because now, I talk to my kids, they're like, well, Biden's too old. I don't think it's age because in 100 years, maybe being 80 is nothing. But maybe 18 years is should be it. Maybe it should be 3 terms in the Senate and 9 terms in this House. I don't know. That seems like a decent number, but how do you feel about that?
So actually, if you look at the trends that are out there right now, the average length of service in the House is actually fluttered down. I'm not going to say it's plummeted, but it's below 10 years.
Because people are getting beat or they're retiring.
Or frankly, they're getting just burnt out because it's rough right now in terms of the polarization that's there. I mean, you look at the productivity of this Congress in terms of the number of bills that have been signed into law. You have to go back before the Civil War to see that low level.
Yeah.
And so, the reward end of it is really hard for people to see. I'm very lucky in this district because, working in a representing a shipyard and a Navy base and University of Connecticut. I mean, these are 3 major institutions and pillars in Connecticut where the work you do in Washington, it is very plain to see in terms of the benefits and the results.
Yeah, you have to get after it because that's an active thing all the time. And I do think the frustration is even more so in the Senate is like, if you are an action-oriented person, it's very difficult. And that's why
the process is a killer.
Gravitate toward like a governor type job or even a municipal job. We're back with Congressman Joe Courtney from the 2nd District here in Bryan and Company. Let's talk about the district for a second here. And when you talk to your constituents, we talked about, electric boat and the subs are a big deal. And we'll get into more of that later. But, are the issues the classic issues? I mean, housing affordability, jobs, inflation, like what's really important to the people right now?
Absolutely. I mean, having lived in the district and obviously represented the district now for a while, it is a very sort of pragmatic constituency where people are very focused on kitchen table issues and think a lot about things like the future for their kids and just where what the world's going to look like 10 years now from now as opposed to just this instant. Having said that, I mean, there are real urgent issues that are out there. The job market is very strong. I mean, North New London job market.
You need more people is what you need.
We need more people and you need more housing for people to live in. I mean, if you talk to the HR people at EB or just even, chambers of commerce. I was up in the Quiet Corner Chamber and somebody who's not in the submarine supply chain business but is an employer out there was just, losing it about the fact that his people that he's trying to hire can't find a place to live.
But what can you do as a congressman, the federal government, to you're in a position where you don't hold all the levers, right?
No, that's exactly true. Having said that, I mean, ultimately it's a supply and demand issue. If you're going to lower the price of housing, make it more affordable and available, you have to expand supply.
Right.
I mean, it's.
But is that happening within your municipalities? Do you talk to the mayors and the first electmen about?
So here's the good news. I mean, there's some real things that are happening. Really from one end of the district to the other, we're because of the Infrastructure Act, brownfield money. Now we're in a place where a lot of properties are being redeveloped for housing. Okay, so, whether it's in Stafford, Vernon, Killingly, New London, some of these brownfield sites that have just been sitting there stagnating and are now getting funds from EPA Boston to come in and assess and clean up those properties. And developers are coming in. And those properties, there's no pushback locally in terms of turning that into housing because everybody wants to get those things, back and productive and safe.
What's the timetable on stuff like that?
I mean, historically, it's been very long to do those. But because of the Infrastructure Act, we're seeing now just, again, probably a half dozen sites I could tick off in terms of where that redevelopment is happening. Norwich, there's a property that, again, if you drove through on Main Street, again, that's being redeveloped. It was the old YMCA building. It was a falling down, asbestos-loaded wreck that was there. In Vernon, Daniels Mills, which, again, as you take the turn into Rockville, again, that got money from EPA. And the state, when that money comes in, then the state also can help match and developers come in. So again, that's one component of how you saw this, where the federal government can make an impact in terms of stimulating more supply.
Because there's real trickle down, because if you say electric boat, which is such the focus, they can't hire people if they don't have a place to go. And if they don't have a place to go and they can't work there, then they can't get their work done in time. And then deadlines are the biggest challenge for the industry that you're trying to preserve for the district.
So in that particular corner of the district, I mean, there actually has been some good news. I mean, the city of New London has 1,000 new market rent apartments that didn't exist, you know, 3 or 4 years ago that are available and completely occupied. There's more that are already getting permitted. Again, New London embraces, you know, this trend because, it's been a distressed municipality and they want to make it a more vibrant community. And so the mayor has just, you know, but Groton now has got really significant new housing complex that are moving forward. Stonington, Pawcatuck area there, the old movie theater is now going to be 400 units that are there. So again, the market is responding, and there, if you present it the right way, communities are going to, and particularly when you're talking about existing sites that have already been commercially zoned, like the movie theater, or places where again you're redeveloping blighted properties.
You know, I'm talking with Joe Courtney, congressman in the 2nd district here in Bryan and Company. I was talking with Jeff Auker on Saturday. He's the he works for the city of Hartford in their economic development. I just wish there was a way to, make new neighborhoods as opposed to just apartment. And I know because it's not profitable. I understand all the economics of it. It's more profitable to put up a building with 400 units than to create row houses or a couple of streets. But I wish we could actually build communities.
So I was with the home builders last week, and we were talking about the proposal that the Harris campaign has put out for tax credits for starter homes construction. Which the home builders were quick to point out, they've been touting that for a number of years. But who cares? I mean, the fact is, it's a good idea, and it's a way of again making just the economics of starter home construction more affordable.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because I mean, I think I just would love to have streets and. I don't. Maybe I'm getting 50s Pleasantville images, but I don't know.
I mean, people want that. I mean, there's no. You're right.
I don't want to go up an elevator to a fifth floor and then have 20 apartments on my floor. I don't know. I just feel like that's not conducive to community, which is what we need is community.
But if you look at the profile of who is getting hired down there, I mean, again, it is a lot.
They're young, probably single,
Gen Z or single, etc.
I want to ask you one more thing on the We know our geography. New England's old, not just the people, but I mean the region's old. It's been developed for hundreds of years. It's not like Arizona. Do you think Connecticut can ever be different than a slow growth regional player, right? I mean, can we be a faster growing economy ever?
Well, as I said, in 2023, the North New London job market was the fastest growing in Connecticut, second fastest in New England.
Well, because EB had pants on fire and they had to hire 5,000 people.
But the bottom line is that, what I would like to see is the state really capitalize on that in terms of, because it does have a ripple effect. There's just no question that the economic multiplier effect of manufacturing jobs is the highest of any sector. And so as we'll talk more, this is not a blip. 2023 was not a one-year one-off. If you look at what's already funded in the budget for submarine construction and what's coming, which again we can talk about, this is a long-term trend.
Okay, we're gonna we had Mike France on, your Republican opponent in the upcoming election last week, and we're gonna play for people just a comment he had about Congressman Courtney and his role with Electric Boat and the sub program. We'll have that for you. I'd say at 8:50. We're back here with Congressman Joe Courtney here from the 2nd District. I did have a question from a listener I wanted to get in there. We get a lot of people that want to talk about the data centers, believe it or not, that they think that whether it's – I get a lot of DiBella comments. You can comment if you want that it's just a sort of a payday. Then the energy suck.
Right.
All these different things. I mean, are these things good for us? Because they don't seem to be – they're not. They may be good for the tax base, maybe, but they're not necessarily job creators, and they're energy suckers, and I don't know.
I mean, so Waterford obviously is a part of the state that is ground zero in terms of this issue because there's a data center application pending before the state siting council that is really going to decide whether or not it gets built or not. And so
you support it.
I mean, I've talked to the town. I mean, there's no question that they feel that it's going to be beneficial to the town financially. And again, because they're putting it on the site of Dominion Power, which is a very unique piece of property, obviously has a huge power generation, the biggest in New England at this point, yeah. that they would just plug into.
Right.
But that's
but taking
energy,
a lot. But taking
and,
a lot.
And that's where the energy suck is really a concern. When it was first sort of posed, I did not realize, and I don't think a lot of people realize, the volume of power that those things consume.
And that in conjunction with already the spike in prices, it's a very sensitive topic.
Right. And so the neighborhood obviously is very concerned about noise issues you know, whether or not they've mitigated enough. I mean, again, it is really the State Siting Council that's going to be the decision.
Do you think it's going to get built? Do you think it's going to happen?
I'm not sure. I mean, I could see where they might modify it or
– Or to make it smaller?
That yeah, which, you know, that's certainly – I mean, I'm not really an expert in right. terms of what their discretion is. But I've heard people, you know, even yesterday when I was down in that part of the district talking about it, and that was one possibility that's there. I mean, look at what's the data center demand that's out there right now is because of AI. I mean, AI, which is, you know, going gangbusters in the stock market. Yeah. Everybody's getting into the act. It consumes tremendous amounts of power. And frankly, you know, we haven't done anything in Washington in terms of AI or technology proliferation to begin with. And there is bipartisan desire right now yeah. to start sort of saying, you know, we've got to actually get more involved here because, I mean, obviously there's very sort of negative parts of AI in yep. terms of just the way it can just, you know, overwhelm misinformation
yeah.
and political campaigns.
We're worried about the Terminator. You know what I mean? We're
right,
worried about
right.
all the sci-fi, you know,
but there's
nightmares.
Benefits too in terms of just, you know, when we talk about shipbuilding production, I mean, actually one way that I think they can increase production is by actually adopting or using AI as a tool, you know, in terms of, you know, taking care of tasks, which, you know, are too time consuming.
Yeah.
I'm not like involved in the Siting Council dispute, but I think, you know,
yeah.
you've described well the issues that are there, and certainly I'm hearing a lot about it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, you know, Congress, you know, again, it was true for the tech companies and social media, maybe with technology too. It's hard to be, the private sector is so fast, and when you're profit motivated, it's just, it's faster. They have more money to hire the smarter people, and DC is just going to be behind on these things, you know. But
crypto is another example of that.
Crypto, cybersecurity,
all of it.
It's
right.
just, and so I don't know. I mean, I was encouraged in the recent past. There seems to be a little more public-private partnerships. But the reason China and Russia, they do so well on these things because they co-opt the best private talent. And we can't do that because we're a capitalist society, which we should be. But I mean, that's what makes your job difficult.
Well, it also, they kind of run roughshod over any kind of resistance or opposition. I mean, dictators get to basically just, you know, tune out, you know, opposing voices or people who raise questions. And really, that is our challenge, is that we've got to get the right balance here in terms of making sure that this country stays ahead. I'm bullish on it. We are still, I mean, our economy right now is growing faster significantly than China.
China's in trouble.
Exactly. Yep. And Putin, if it was not for the war, I think they would be in a depression, not a recession. I mean, because the government spending is, I think, propping that economy up.
We're talking with Joe Courtney. We're at 8:50, we'll talk about Mike France and his opponent, but I want to get through a couple other quick things here because I don't get you very often for this kind of time. I know who you support in the presidential race. I mean, that's not a question.
My buddy Tim Walz.
Yeah, but you came in with him, right?
I did. We've been friends.
Is he as folksy but yet witty at the same time as it seems?
He's just a great human being. He's just a great guy, you know, and you know, he was a complete dark horse when he got elected. I mean, I was landslide Joe, winning by 83 votes that year. But that was a targeted race by both national parties. Tim's race was completely off the radar screen. He defeated an incumbent in a district that hadn't voted Democrat since the early 1900s.
Right.
And you know, did 12 straight years there. You know, during the Affordable Care Act, when so many Democrats lost their House seats, he stood tall and hung on. Anyway, I think I give the vice president so much credit for picking him. They apparently have great chemistry together.
Well, it was a gutsy move. You got some older white guy from Minnesota. You know what I mean?
Very strong bipartisan index. Was a member of the Ag Committee, which yeah. I served on with him for 4 years. the food producers and ag sector in that part of the world, they know him and trust him. In his military service, 24 years, he lost hearing in both ears because of his work in an artillery unit. He had a prosthetic to put into his ears because of the tinnitus that he suffered. He doesn't talk about it too much. And, you know, these people were trying to swift boat him or, you know, challenge his military credentials. He has a, you know, certified VA disability because of his service, you know, dealing with equipment that is just literally ear shattering.
I mean, listen, maybe he talked about it, him having a rank that he doesn't have, but there are nuances to why that's the case. I don't want to get into that.
I understand.
I don't want to get into that necessarily, but I think it's interesting that you had that. And there are people who say he's swung further left as governor than he was in Congress.
Because the fifth highest ranking for business climate in the country, the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, no, I mean, but what I want to ask you real quickly here, I want to make sure we preserve
Sorry,
enough time.
Very defensive.
No, I mean, and Jim Gaffigan did a great job on SNL this weekend. I thought it was great. I thought it was
the leaf blower.
It was just so good. But are you worried about the election? I listen to everything and watch as much as I can, and I think we're set up. We're not going to know at 11 o'clock on that Tuesday night. We're not. And I don't know what's going to happen after. I don't know what happens, you know, if Trump wins. I don't know what happens if Trump loses. And I don't know what the reaction is going to be. Are you concerned at all about what's going to happen?
I am. I mean, I think that when you look at, what happens on November 6th, the day after, again, we have this whole machinery where states have to certify results, submit their electors by December 15th.
I'm told there are some states set up not to certify. That's what I'm being told by some people.
And that's really where I think the I don't want to say vulnerability, but the hot spot is going to be in terms of this. January 6th is scheduled, 2025, to be the day when Congress takes up the certifications. It's the same day.
Same day.
Yeah. And, and Speaker Johnson, who served on the Sea Powers Subcommittee with me and, you know, was a good member on that committee at Barksdale Air Base, where we have jurisdiction over that area there, and really was a very good pragmatic member. But he is somebody, if you listen to Liz or read Liz Cheney's book, I mean, he's the guy who wrote the memo that basically said Congress has the right to, you know, basically decertify, which I don't think is the law that's there. So, this is going to be a pretty tense time period.
I think the way it's written, it opens for interpretation, but there's no reason it should be that way. You know what I mean? Like the way it shouldn't be. But I think the way it's written, there is some ambiguity to it. And again, we got to hit traffic really quick and then get back to it with Congressman Joe Courtney. Someone told me this is one guitar. It can't be one guitar. It's got to be acoustic and electric. Or is it one guitar? I love this song. She Sells Sanctuary by The Cult. I'm sure it's on Congressman Courtney's playlist when he's at the congressional weight room throwing up plates on each side of the bench press. Okay, so you're running against the same Republican,
yep.
Mike France, and, you know, it seems that, you know, we had him on last week, and, you know, the playbook for Republicans right now, and there's some strength to it, is inflation and immigration. Immigration is a vulnerability for Democrats for sure, and inflation, even though on the macro it's abated, it's still, the grocery store is still a problem.
Right,
you acknowledge both those things.
Absolutely.
And so, but in your district, you know, there's, if you don't have those submarines, you're in a lot of trouble.
Right.
And, you know, I asked Mike about, as it relates to Electric Boat and the Virginia submarines, what would he do that you can't do, basically, was the question. And here was his answer.
And so I have a level of experience that Mark Warner just cannot match. And you point out things that he has failed in. You know, he loves this title of Two Sub Joe. You know, that is purely a political slogan now, since for the last 6 years, we've only delivered one submarine per year. And it, not only does he not solve that problem, I don't think he even understands the why. Why are we not delivering on the contracts that have been delivered two submarines per year?
So I'm not going to ask a pointed question. I just want you to respond.
Sure. So first of all, good news. Just a couple weeks ago, USS New Jersey Was delivered, Virginia class submarine, and later in the month of October, USS Iowa is going to be delivered to the Navy. In 2025, we're going to see Massachusetts and Idaho delivered, and in 2026, Arkansas and Utah delivered.
So you're saying you are on schedule to deliver 2 years?
COVID hit shipbuilding and manufacturing across the board. I mean, there's no denying that. And there was a slowdown in production cadence. Social distancing made it really hard in a confined space to keep the production at the right level. And there was the great retirement at EB, which hit hard. I mean, Kevin Graney, the CEO, will describe that. Last year in 2023, 5,300 people were hired at Electric Boat. That's the largest number in 120 years of that company, more than World War II or the Cold War. So far this year, 3,000 have been hired, and they're projecting they'll be at about 4,000 by the end of this calendar year. When you look at the program, we in Congress, we authorize and appropriate for submarines, and we have done two per year since 2011. Again, my subcommittee, which I've chaired and now I'm ranking member, we have been a driving force in terms of making sure that stays on track. And there are right now between the Virginia program and the Columbia program, which he never talks about, those are 2.5 times the size of Virginia's. We now have basically 19 submarines that have been authorized and funded. It takes 65 months to build a Virginia-class submarine, longer for a Columbia. So again, there is a huge backlog of work, but the production cadence is improving, and we're going to get to that.
So what years did you? So you basically, you're saying because of COVID, this is the problem. And I want to ask about the staffing in a second, but what years did you not deliver to?
I can get back to you with exact. I mean, Rickover was delivered in 2022. That was it. Okay, right. And then but the year before that, I believe Oregon and Vermont and Montana were delivered over a period of time. So, but the bottom line is just, that is undeniable that there was a lapse. The question is, the Navy came in with their budget this year, which, by the way, had more money for submarines for 2024 than 2023. Mike says it got cut in half, which is not numerically false. But they did underfund the Virginia program so that there would not be a second sub authorized and appropriated. Again, we're talking, that would be number 20.
Right.
I'm in the queue that's there. It's a mistake because it sends a terrible signal to the supply chain group, which is a huge part of success in terms of building submarines. There are over 3,000 suppliers that are there. We need to get that number up. And when the Navy fluctuates with its budgets, that's terrible in
right.
terms of the signal that it sends. But when we marked up the bill earlier this year in the Sea Power Subcommittee, we put the money back in to get that second sub funded. So did the Senate Armed Services Committee. The appropriators right now have not come to agreement.
So it's not secured, but it's in there.
It's in there in terms of the NDAA. And again, when we go back for lame duck, this thing is going to get hashed out.
Quickly, AUKUS is fine then? I mean, all the supplying that needs to be done
yes,
for that?
Yes, we passed the AUKUS authorities.
People who don't know, this is the relationship to give submarines to Australia, correct?
We're going
to
sell them in 2032, 34, and 37. And again, the authorities for that went through our subcommittee. Very proud of that accomplishment. There was a joint communique between the three governments just last week on AUKUS, which basically listed all of the progress that's being made. We have Australian sailors and officers training in Groton how to drive nuclear-powered submarines. The Courtney Gallagher Amendment in 2023, Mike Gallagher, Republican from Wisconsin, that created the authority for that pipeline to take place. And they're hitting it out of the park. They're actually doing better than American-born sailors and officers in terms of their scores going through sub school.
You said this is going to be your ninth. You're running for your ninth term.
Tenth.
Okay, you're in your ninth. Joe Courtney from the 2nd District. If you read about the Pacific Theater in World War II, you know that the Australian soldiers were the toughest there was.
Like, no, they're a great ally
of anyone in the world.
And this is a huge lift for them. It's a country that's smaller than Texas population wise, and they're going to get into running a nuclear powered submarine fleet.
I had a couple more questions about Electric Boat, but we don't have time. I just want you to take 30, 45 seconds to pitch why voters should give you a 10th term.
Sure. So, again, I am running because how much I, you know, care about where I, this part of Connecticut. I think it's a very special district. My Australian friends who've come visited over the last couple of years have really made that comment to me repeatedly. Again, we've got challenges ahead in terms of making sure that our workforce is ready. Later this morning, I'm going to go cut a ribbon for a new welding lab, which federal funds, the Perkins Grant Program and Navy funds is helping finance that's there. And we're seeing 17 other comprehensive non-trade schools that are now getting into these career pathway programs. And that's what really gets me excited is that, you know, we're helping kids today, but they're creating a future for themselves that they can support themselves and their families. And my two committees, Armed Services and Education, are perfectly connected in terms of that effort. And I want to keep it up.
Congressman Cordy, again, we're grateful for your time.
Thanks.